Welcome to Commander Central, episode 58. Today we're going to be talking about secretly modular cards, which would be cards that do a specific thing but have kind of a stealth modular use. Very similar to that giant gallon jug of Kool-Aid in Max's kitchen that also functions as a doorstop. I'm Dana.
I'm Max.
And I'm Chris.
And that's a true story. I'm not making that up. I had to come in and ask Max, why is there a giant jug of Kool-Aid in the middle of your kitchen floor?
First off, it's Hawaiian Punch.
Hawaiian Punch. Sorry. All right.
I thought it was that, too.
This episode is brought to you by our newest sponsor, Hawaiian Punch.
Second, my apartment is crooked, so the door into from the garage to the apartment kind of closes on its own.
So it like slowly closes when you're trying to haul groceries
in? When I'm
in.
Hauling groceries in, so I always prop it open when I haul all my groceries in, and then I let it slam shut when I'm done.
So the gallon jug of Hawaiian Punch is secretly modular.
Yeah.
All right. Good to know.
I use a bungee cord from the door to the refrigerator door.
My fridge is across the room.
That's why I use a bungee cord.
It's a big bungee cord.
No, you just stretch it really far.
I don't want to be in the way when that comes off. There's
Max
hooks involved.
Eye, right?
Yeah.
Any fun games we played this week from anybody? Well, we all played in a tournament last weekend.
We did.
A 1v1 commander tournament using the Modo online list. And Max and Chris both made top 8.
Mm-hmm.
Max, what decks were you playing?
I was playing Chris's mono red Zergo deck.
And Chris, you're playing
Teferi combo.
You mean, cruel. I'm not going to say any other names beyond that. So I ran into Max in the first round, and I was playing my Edric, my Master of Tress deck without Edric. I basically took the deck, took Edric out, and put in Azuri. And that doesn't work nearly as well as it does with Edric. Because I played Max in the first round. Although the game, it wasn't like you blew me out. I mean, I hung in there, but you did win eventually.
Yeah.
And then I wound up going 1-2 before I dropped. But I wouldn't have won. I mean, I could have maybe won another one and gotten lucky, but it wasn't like I was competitive at all. So Max beat me in the first round and went on to...
I ended up going 3-2 in Swiss. It was
okay.
5 rounds of Swiss. I had a bad round 3 and 4 because I can't read. I lost to the mirror because I read Dire Fleet Instigator. Is that the mono red one?
The Snapcaster?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. I had it in my hand, read it, and it says you have to cast the spell you grab out of their graveyard this turn.
Okay.
Read it, played it, grabbed a lightning strike because that's all the extra mana I had, and I'm an idiot, and I said pass the turn, and he went, you can't cast that now. And it would have, at that point, I had 10 life, he had 9, and my plan was to lightning strike the creature, and I would have had lethal the next turn.
Ugh.
And here's Chris shaking his head at me like, you idiot.
Well, in your defense, it wasn't your deck, so you didn't know precisely all the ins and outs.
Right. But round 5 was a win and in for me.
But you won.
I did, and I knocked the 8th place person out of top 8.
How'd you do? Now, you made the top 8 too, Chris.
Yep.
What'd you wind up finishing?
Overall, I would have finished 3rd.
Okay.
And I finished 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So at least you guys showed up, unlike myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry for the insult, but...
We both had winning ins in round 5, because we were both 9-10, and we did it.
Nice. So how did you like playing 1v1?
It's crack.
You liked it?
I love it.
Cool. It was fine. I didn't, get hooked. And I'll probably come play again at some point with a deck that's actually a little more designed for it, but... I like deck building as part of it, and you're much more limited to having to build couple of very specific decks to do well for the most part. So I lose that, which I like a lot. But it was fun. It was interesting. There's a lot more interaction than I thought there would be between the individual decks. I think because unlike maybe some 4-player competitive stuff where it's pretty easy to just goldfish because there's 4 people there, you can't just goldfish. You have somebody coming at you nonstop the whole game. So yeah. I kind of liked seeing that. That was interesting.
I think people's biggest mistake with it is they don't aggressively mulligan like you're supposed to.
I did in one of my losses.
I'll mull down to 5 if I have to.
Well, particularly in red, in that mono red deck.
Yep.
You can be pretty aggressive.
I'm learning. I know how to do better
for
next time.
For your first tournament, that was pretty decent. You did all right.
I got the revenge win in the top 8 against the mirror, so...
Okay, so how about real Commander games this week? Meh.
I worked.
Chris worked the shop that night. Mm-hmm. How about you, Max?
I comboed off with Brago again.
And then scooped.
Nope.
You didn't scoop, okay?
I didn't scoop. I offered everybody at the table, I'm like, So what I ended up doing was I went infinite with Whirler Rogue, creating infinite Thopters with Stronic Resonator.
Okay.
And I just said, I'm going to create infinite Thopters. Do you guys, because it was down to just three of us. It was a Pure and Toothy deck and a mono red deck that kind of blew his load the turn beforehand, trying to get the Pure and Toothy guy down to like, he got him down to like 15. So I'm like, do you just want me to scoop? It's a combo. And they both said, nope, we might have an answer.
Okay, yeah,
I'm like,
sure.
Okay, so for simplicity's sake, I said, I'm just going to stop at 1,000 then. I have 1,000 Thopters. If you can't do anything by my next turn, I'm going to kill both of you, obviously.
Right.
Because neither of them had reach or flying or anything like that. The red player took his turn and pretty much said, you're going to draw every card you want off of Rhystic Study this turn because I can't afford to pay for it.
Right, yeah.
Because he casted Mizzix Mastery Overloaded and had like 10 things in his graveyard. And I was holding on to like a Force of Will. I'm like, okay, wait, let's make sure you can't kill me out of nowhere before you go ahead and do this. And he ended up doing a bunch of stuff, made some tokens, drew some cards, but didn't find a board wipe. Pure and Toothy took their turn, and they dropped a Bane of Progress.
Oh.
And I'm sitting there, and I'm holding a Force of Will.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well, you have no Trample and you have no Haste, so that can resolve. I'm fine with 1,000 Bane of Progress because it doesn't have reach, doesn't have trample, and I have 10 power in the air coming at you next turn. So that resolved, and then he went to cast Rishkar's Expertise. Or no, he casted some sort of draw spell, and that's what I Force of Willed.
Okay.
Because I'm like, I'm not going to let you find your answer now.
Right, yeah.
I would have let him cast Rishkar's Expertise.
And draw 1,000.
He would have lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening is, he went to Rift. I rewound the Rift.
Nice.
Untapped a couple duels. I pathed. Okay, I went to pass Spike Weaver because I'm like, that's just going to be a problem for me. And Blake was nice enough to be like, the real answer is you want to path Toothy because when he leaves the battlefield, I'm going to draw 53 cards, and that's how many cards are in my library.
Oh, sure.
I'm like, okay, fine. I'll path Toothy. He drew 53 cards. He goes, okay, well, I get my next turn. I said, no, you're going to die when you draw your card. He goes, oh, yep, good game. So it was a very grindy game towards the end. I mean, I started that game with 2 lands and a mana rock, and it wasn't a good mana rock. It was like a signet, so it wasn't like Brago just burst out of nowhere. It was painful.
I had a Talran game, like a last game of the night Talran game. Talking about missing triggers in late night games.
New deck to put on the list.
Yeah. Well, I just drawn a bunch of cards. It wasn't even missing triggers. I just had drawn so many cards. I had like 25 in my hand. And the guy across from me went to cast Epicenter, which if you have whatever
threshold.
All players sacrifice all lands. But I had enough Drakes in the air. I could have killed him. And I just was like, you know what? I'm just going to rift all your stuff in response to that. And then my Drakes will be able to kill people in 2 turns. I should have countered it because I had a Merchant Scroll in hand, and I could have went and got a counter spell with Merchant Scroll, and then because I had the ability to flash it in because I had a flash in hand, or Quicken in hand, so I could have flashed a Merchant Scroll, went and got a counter spell and countered it. But I kept thinking Merchant Scroll was Mystic Tutor, which goes to top of the library, just because it was late and I wasn't reading my cards, and I had so many options in my hand that I was like, my brain wasn't working. I'm like, I'll just cast Rift because I can just do it and I know I can do it. But the thing I wasn't thinking through was I had Kindred Discovery out, which whenever a creature comes into play or attacks, you draw a card.
Yep.
And all three players were still alive and they couldn't have done anything. They had no recourse after the Rift, but I would have decked myself.
Yeah.
Because it's not a May effect on those Drakes. And I had, I think, like 16 Drakes in play. And it would have taken me 3 turns to kill everybody, or 4 turns, whatever it would have been. And I would have decked myself. So anyway, that was entirely my fault in like 3 different ways. But it's also like 11:30 and I've been playing, you know, for like the last 6 hours. And I'm like, my brain is just not having any of that. Any MVP cards anybody saw this week? I'm gonna use Decree of Pain for mine because I saw it cast 6 times in 1 game. And it was cycled every single time.
How'd they keep bringing it back?
I cast, mine was 3 of those. I cast mine 3 times. Once off a Skullwinder and once off a Regrowth. And then one player brought his back, I think, with Eternal Witness after having cycled it previously. And then the other player wound up cycling it. It was a long game for one because everyone had a bunch of answers. But like the 2-in-1 turn cycle was because the guy that cycled it, there was a ton of 2-2s in play.
Okay.
And he had a bunch of like 4-4s or something, 3-3s. So he cycled it, basically cleared the board, and I'm like, well, I might as well kill his stuff too. So then I cycled mine on top of it. So we had that kind of thing happen. And then I cycled it one time when he had 3 Wurmcoil engines in play. He had a Wurmcoil engine and 2 copies of Wurmcoil engine. And he was at like 14 life or something. I'm like, I can't have him swing next turn and gain
18 life.
But I didn't want the engines to split either. So I sudden spoiling him first to turn his Wurmcoils into 0-1s and then cycle Decree of Pain to kill him. So that way, he didn't get his tokens either. But it just, like, in that game, that cycle Decree of Pain made so many plays. And it's not that it isn't great if you don't cycle it, because it's awesome if you can cast it, but it just was a weird game where, like, cycling it was the good play every single time. I also saw a couple Windgrace's Judgments go off. In that game, I saw at least 2, and a couple Council's Judgments that night, too, that were for huge swings. But we think we've already mentioned those in, like, the last couple weeks. Those good cards are good.
Yep.
Both those cards are good, so. Okay, let's move on to some social media stuff. So we had a couple of sign-up questions we asked in back-to-back weeks. The first one was about proxies, and we had a lot of responses about proxies.
Woohoo!
Most of which were actually people that were relatively in agreement with us. A couple weren't. But I think part of that was we were kind of simultaneously having 2 conversations. One was just not liking proxies because they basically give the game an unlimited power level. If you're not restricted by anything, then that one guy is going to print up everything, and then everyone else can either just lose or do the same thing, and then that just changes the entire shape of the meta. So we don't like them for that reason, but we're also kind of talking about, well, some low-powered proxies or some low-powered cards that people don't have. Like, if you're playing a Golgari deck and you just happen to have a Bayou, that's just not impacting your deck at all.
No.
And that's where we were kind of saying, well, maybe you deserve to run that Bayou if you own one.
Yep.
That's not changing the face of the game. I mean, yes, it's better than running whatever else land. It's better than not having, like, having a Bayou is better than not having a Bayou. I'm not going to argue that. But, like, the amount of times it impacts the game, it's just negligible. And maybe you, if you're someone who's been playing a long time and grinding it out, and you've got a Bayou, we kind of think that's maybe something that's cool, too. I think those are slightly separate conversations, because in that case, the Bayou almost feels like a skin in the video game or like a foil. It's like just something that you have played the game a long time and have. Because I wouldn't make that argument about Time Twister. Like, if you've got a Time Twister, I'm not going to say, you know, this dude's got Time Twisters and everyone in his deck, suck it up. Like, that's also kind of a problem. But no one's doing but no one's doing that. Like, we're talking about, for the most part, dual lands and a few things that are relatively innocuous in games. So those were kind of the 2 things we had going on simultaneously. We also had a sign-up question on Cyclonic Rift and what would you do if it got banned. And we got a ton of responses on Rift.
Yeah, we did.
So you guys want to read a couple of those?
Sure.
So the first one was from Legendary Creature Podcast. They said they've been playing with in a budget league, which basically means you can't play Rift if it's on a budget because it's over $10 now. So people have adapted with spot removal and more situational mass bounces like Aether Spouts, which is probably kind of what we said we would wind up doing too, is just swap in something similar like that. And Lily Vest tweets wrote, if it gets banned. I responded to that actually in the account, but like, do you guys think it will get banned? I don't think it will.
No, it won't.
Nope. It can be countered.
I think it's on the edge, and if they banned it, it wouldn't surprise me. But I don't think it will.
No, I think it's not a problem in the sense that, you know, it can be countered.
Right.
It's really, you should be using it to win the game.
And they've printed at least one response to it outside of blue into various protection.
Right.
So it wouldn't surprise me to see maybe 1 or 2 Rift answers get printed up. But I don't think it will get banned, but I guess it wouldn't surprise me. CCO Brando responded to us as well.
Oh, yeah, our good friend from the north, you know. He said he tried it in a deck once and realized he didn't need that wussy crap and just put another clone in. But we're guessing he was probably making that decision drunk on a moose. So
that sounds
good on you, Brando.
Yeah. He's heading to a hockey game, drinking a Molson.
Yep.
And said, nope, I'm not playing blue. Taylor Rogers, a.k.a. T underscore Laser, wrote that he plays Red Elemental Blast, Pyroblast, Guttural Response, things like that, to counter Rift. And if it was banned, that would free up slots he runs to deal with Rift, which I guess I hadn't thought about. That's true. There's probably some people that are running, if you're playing a lot of Red or Boros or something, those are legit cards to deal with counter spells, but particularly to deal with Rift, so that makes sense.
I don't know if Rift is that much overpowered that I'd run those cards.
Well, at least like something like Blue Elemental Blast or something, or Red Elemental Blast, and Red, being able to counter a counter spell is pretty nice. And if he can hit any blue permanent, the fact that it stops Rift is also really useful.
He may also be the only non-blue player in his shop.
Right, that's the thing,
so
too.
So you got to come prepared. But I kind of see what Chris is saying. Three slots for one card might be a little overboard, but we don't know. We're not in that local meta.
So that's not everyone. There's a lot of responses, but thanks anyone else who reached out to us. It's actually good to see all the people that had thoughts on that card. All right, Max, Flipside Gaming, what are they going on this week?
As usual, if you use our promo code CMDR on any of your purchases, you'll get 10% off. On top of that, you'll also be entered in a drawing to win a box of Guilds of Ravnica when it comes out. So one entry per use of the code per name. So you have until the day the product comes out to get entered. And then they will be coordinating the winner through us to announce it.
So that's a pretty good deal. 10% off and you get entered in a chance to win that box of Guilds of Ravnica.
And yeah, so you got, what, 3 weeks?
3 weeks. Yeah. And my understanding is it's the drawing is specific to our code. So
yeah, yep.
That's great.
Yes, for sure. So just buy something. Max was looking today. You bought a couple things from them.
I haven't finalized that purchase yet.
Like they actually, because we're talking about Scavenger Grounds, they had really good prices on Scavenger Grounds.
Yeah, they do.
So check them out. It does us a favor and gives you a chance to win something nice. We also have some ongoing contests here.
So yes, Patreon. You can find us on Patreon by searching CMDR Central. And if you become a patron supporter by the 1st of October, you will get entered in to win this month's drawing, which is a Commander deck from the past, sponsored by our LGS here, D20 Gaming in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. So thank you to Phil and Savannah for that.
Thank you very much.
On top of that, we also have our new contest, our Patreon goal of getting 100 patron supporters. And when that happens and when we maintain those 100 people for about a month, we are going to be giving away a copy of From the Vault Angels.
And From the Vault Transform.
To two people. So one of them.
One to each. And if you want to find us on social media, Chris, where can they find us?
All over the place.
Everywhere. We're everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah, you can even Google us.
You can, yeah. Actually, I've done that.
Have you really?
Just because I was curious, yeah.
Well, the most likely place that we actually respond, I guess you could say, would be the Twitter. You can find us at CMDR Central. The next most likely spot to find us would be Facebook. Search us up, CMDR Central. You can find us on YouTube, where we post a lot of our content and other stuff. Search that also, CMDR Central. And then online at CMDRCentral.com.
All right. That takes care of all that. So let's talk about the show.
We host a Magic the Gathering podcast about Commander.
We also have some other side podcasts we've discussed on here.
Rick and Morty.
Pokemon Go.
NBA.
Movie trivia.
I think that's all of them. Is that the four we've done?
And
so
cooking.
Far?
Should we talk about fantasy football too?
Sure.
Yeah, well, I actually got that message from Max because he stumbled in. He went to his local drinking establishment where he does.
It's called a watering hole.
His local watering hole. There we go. And he messaged me. He's like, it's all women doing fantasy football in here tonight.
It was. There was like eight of them, which is awesome. I had no problem with that. I walked it in. They had a big double high top, eight of them, and they were all on their laptops arguing about their lineups for this week.
Yeah, I got a message while he was down there, too, from the guy he was with, going, so do you play Skyrim in first person or third person? I play.
That's a random question.
Yeah, I play it in first person. Okay, thank you. I'm like, what?
And you automatically knew he was with me.
Yep.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay, the main show topic this week is going to be talking about cards that have a stealth modular mode. And what that means, here's the best example.
Ninjutsu.
Ninjutsu, right, yeah. That's the stealth mode. That's what we're talking about. We're just talking about ninja today. That's it.
I thought that was phasing.
On our new ninja podcast.
Or shadow.
Ninja Central. So let's use Path to Exile for the most obvious example of this. path. As most people know, I might as well read it quick. So it's one white mana for an instant, and you exile target creature, and that creature's controller may search your library for a basic land and put it into play tapped. So kind of the hidden modular mode here that I've seen done not infrequently is it can be your creature. Like the card was intended to be a fixed Swords to Plowshares, more or less, and it's maybe better than Swords to Plowshares. So that didn't work the way they had planned it, but you can use it to ramp a land. And if you're Pickering, you're in mono white, spending one mana to sacrifice a token or a creature that's already dying because someone's killed it or they're trying to steal it with control magic to ramp yourself up one land in mono white or Boros or something, or even maybe in not those colors. Like if you're in Selesnya and you've got all the ramp in the world, but if you're holding the Swords to Plowshares anyway and a Path to Exile and someone goes to kill your commander, I've seen Max in his Dromoka deck path his Dromoka that's going to go to the command zone anyway to get a land when I know you've got other stuff in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the secret Modra mode in Path to Exile. So we're talking about cards that like weren't printed with a specific purpose but have a secondary purpose that we've seen used in games. So Max, why don't you go first and give us the first card you've got on your list here.
Okay, so my first card is another instant for one colored pip, and that is Berserk. So it's an instant for one green. You have to cast it before the combat damage step, and then target creature gains trample and gets +X/+0 until end of turn, where X is that creature's power. And then at the beginning of the next end step, that creature is destroyed. So what I've actually used this for is to help my opponent kill someone else, and at the same time eliminating that big threat that I can't deal with anyways, because I don't have a Path to Exile or Swords to Plowshares or... maybe I only have a board wipe, but I need to keep all my creatures. So, okay, cool. I'm going to help you, and you're going to kill that guy. And then I'm also going to get rid of that huge, 30-30 Hydra that's probably going to kill me next turn anyways.
And Berserk was definitely not created with that in mind. That's an original alpha card when multiplayer was just not on the horizon at all. So the assumption was you were using Berserk to get, like, basically double damage out of one of your creatures at the cost of it dying that turn. But in a multiplayer game, the way the card is worded... yeah, someone else swings at somebody with their giant Multani or whatever it is. It's a 17-17, and they're like, oh, man, well, I'm at 40. I can take that one Multani hit. Well, now it's in 34-34. Suddenly they're down to 6, and you've just solved that Multani problem.
Yep.
I mean, that's – and the regular mode's fantastic, too, like the as-intended mode. But being the flexibility to do that on Berserk is so, so useful.
And even if you're just – using it on your own creature and you have like indestructibility on it or like a dark steel plate, well, ignore that last clause, I guess.
Or the ability to blink it.
Yep.
Because it doesn't happen until end of turn.
Yep.
So you've got time to respond. Now, I guess technically so does your opponent, but you're probably factoring that in for the most part when you're casting on someone else's creature. So yeah, Berserk is a great example of kind of a hidden modular card. Chris, what's your first one?
Reconnaissance.
Okay, Recon.
So this is a one-mana enchantment. So basically, the whole gist of this card is you pay 0 mana. It's a Maze of Ith, basically,
right,
is
yep.
what it is, for any target creature that you control. Now, the interesting part about this is the way that it's worded and the phase of combat. After you deal combat damage, you can untap your creatures and remove them from combat. So it's giving them pseudo-vigilance.
Right.
This card was not meant to do this.
The intent of Reconnaissance was, this guy's got 3 blockers, and I don't quite know how he's going to block these creatures of mine, so I'm going to swing him with everything and let him make his decisions. And if I don't like those decisions, I'm
yep.
just going to pull him back out of combat.
Yep.
Which is useful. Like for a one-drop enchantment, that in and among itself is pretty decent. And it still does that. However, it also gives you the ability to, if they don't have any blockers, or even if they do, and you're like, I'm fine with those blockers, after combat, you still can just be like, and now I'm going to untap them, and all my dudes are untapped and waiting to block next turn.
Yep. It's also got other things, like if you attack and your opponent plays, what is that, Angel of the Dire Hour, I think it is, that
yeah,
exiles
flash.
All tapped creatures
yep.
or whatever, you're just like, well, then
I'll just untap
them all.
Back them all out
yep.
before that can resolve.
You're thinking of Sunblast Angel.
Sunblast Angel.
Angel of
the Dire Hour is attack. Well, but it would work for that because that's attacking creatures, so your creatures are removed from combat.
Yeah, you
yep.
could respond to the trigger.
Yeah.
And
whereas I think Sunblast Angel, is on someone else's turn, so it would be too late to use it then. But yeah, Angel of the Dire Hour for sure. Or even like someone's Aether Spouts or whatever, which we discussed as a Rift replacement.
Cyclonic
lets you
Rift
back
itself.
Back out of there.
Yep.
So yeah, that's, and it's one white mana, and that's definitely a card that's caught on lately. Because I think Command Zone featured it in.
It was on a Game Nights episode.
It was on the Game Nights because it was like 50 cents for the longest time, and then it went up to a buck ish, and I think it's over $5. It's no longer the budget staple it once was.
Yep, it's an $8 card.
Yep.
Jeez, Command Zone, they make kings on that show. Game Nights and Command Zone. Man. Okay.
What about you, Dana? What's your first one?
I have a white
one?
Card as well. Oblation. Two white in an instant. And the owner of target non-land permanent shuffles it into their library, then draws two cards. Which is pretty straight ahead. I used to run it a lot back when Tuck was a thing. Because if you could deal with somebody's really scary commander.
Mogus.
Yeah. I've oblationed Mogus before. Or Thraxa Mundar. Or... or gave Guru of Spores. I remember doing, like, I've done those all multiple times. But once Tuck went away, then just dealing with someone's creature a lot of times wasn't nearly as effective. Or, like, hitting their commander and having them recast the next turn wasn't always... I mean, sometimes it's worth losing two cards, but, like, it wasn't nearly as effective. However, in looking at it more and more, well, that's still pretty decent, but also kind of like Berserk or Path to Exile... that modular ability on it to just hit one of your tokens and draw two cards off a token for in white for two and a colorless is great. It's almost worth running in mono white or Boros for that mode alone.
Agreed.
Like if you're playing mono white and you've got a token maker and you're, or you're playing Boros and you're making enough tokens, even if you only intend to use it as a draw spell, man, I think it's probably worth running. Black has a couple of, like Ultra's Reap kind of cards where it's one in a black, so it's not quite as expensive. It's less expensive than Oblation. But like black does that where you sacrifice a creature and draw two cards. Same thing as this, essentially, but you're paying one more. In mono white or Boros, I am absolutely okay with doing that. And someone distract the Blightsteel Colossus with haste and swinging at you. Well, okay, I'll just use it as an emergency. I don't care if they draw two cards then. Who cares?
Right.
You just saved yourself from dying.
I think the best part about this card on top of in mono white or Boros, besides just drawing two cards, is the fact that a lot of times in those color combinations, you need a shuffle. And so on top of drawing two cards, you also get to shuffle your library if you haven't seen lands or maybe you're getting flooded. You're maybe increasing the chance to get some gas to start getting yourself back into the game.
I agree with that too. It's just generally a useful card in every mode, and I've started putting it back into decks after taking it out and have no regrets. Max, back to you.
My next one, it's two cards, they're the same thing. It's Deglamour and Unravel the Aether.
Which we've talked about on the show before, because we're kind of fans of those cards.
So they both are one and a green for an instant. Choose target artifact or enchantment. Its owner shuffles it into their library. I use it, A, to get rid of threats, but for the people that have set up the top of their library with a Brainstorm or a top or anything that...
Vamp Tutor, Mystical Tutor, whatever.
You know, you can do it in response, you know, let that resolve, then do it, and then you just screwed up their next turn.
I think I hit you, matter of fact, I did it to you like 2 weeks in a row off in Enlightened Tutor, I believe.
Yep.
And I've used Deglamour, I've used one of the two, I forget which one it was, to save myself for a turn when I was decked. Someone had milled me or whatever it was, and I was down to no cards, and I Deglamoured my own Soul Ring during my upkeep, so I had one card to draw to buy a turn. Now, I don't think it won me the game. But, like...
That's just too cute.
Right, yeah. But, like, I did it. Like, that's something you can do with that card if you're absolutely desperate. You can buy yourself a turn when you're going to get milled. Yeah, I'm a fan of both those cards. And they're also great removal spells just in general. Like, if I have to choose between Naturalize at that same CMC, I would much rather shuffle someone's card into their library than put it in the graveyard. So, those are definitely good picks. How about you, Chris?
This is going to be two of them because they both do basically the same thing. And this I'm pulling off a modern. I haven't seen anyone do it in Commander yet, but I've thought about it. Is the card called Remand and the card called Unsubstantiate. Now, they both return a spell to your hand pretty much is what they're doing. Now, when you cast anything, we're going to use Ulamog the Ceaseless Hunger for instance. It's a cast trigger.
Right.
Well, then I'll just remand it back to my hand. I still destroy exile two permanents and can recast them again next time.
Oh, so like remanding your own Ulamog.
Yes.
Oh, nice. Or really anything, like anything that's a cast trigger, essentially, you could do that with.
Now, for those of you who know Modern, how they do this is they cast Gutshot, remand it back to their hand, right, and cast it again.
Storm.
So you get Storm. The Storm Count going, yeah.
Because yep. When you cast original copy of Gutshot, you know, say you have Storm Count 8, it puts off 8 copies. Well, then it makes the Storm Count 9 with Gutshot. You remand it, makes the Storm Count 10, recast, and it puts off another 11 copies after that.
Yeah, wow. I've never seen anyone do that, but that makes sense for sure.
Yep. And Unsubstantiate is, it can also bounce a creature, so it's got dual versatility on it. So.
Nice. Those are good picks as well. Well, I have a similar one in a similar vein. I'm going to go with Arcane Denial, which is also a counter spell for one in the blue. And counter target spell, its controller may draw up to 2 cards at the beginning of next turn's upkeep. And then you also draw a card at the beginning of next turn's upkeep. So that's, first of all, it's a hard counter that requires 2 mana, and it's only 1 blue. So that makes it pretty easy to leave mana up. I mean, it's just a good counter spell. Yes, your opponent draws 2 cards, but you also replace 1. And whatever you're countering probably costs them enough mana to be worth countering. So like the tempo hit winds up roughly being even. You spend a lot less mana, they get 1 more card than you. Kind of winds up being a wash. I'm a fan of the card. But where I've been using it a lot lately, the Secret Modular mode, is in my Talran deck, since I started running Swarm Intelligence. And Swarm Intelligence makes a copy of whatever spell you're casting. So if you cast a thing, particularly if it's a counter spell or if you're casting a removal spell, you're probably just going to remove 2 things.
Right.
But there's been plenty of times someone's cast a thing and I've countered it with Swarm Intelligence out, which gives me a second copy of that counter spell. Now you can, if you're worried about the person having a counter spell in response, you can use that copy to target their first spell. Therefore, there's 2 counter spells in the stack to deal with.
Yep.
But at least twice, probably in the last month or two, when I've done that, I've known they didn't have mana and didn't have a response. So I've Arcane Denialed that copy, which then lets me draw 3 cards for 2 mana, essentially.
Yep.
So I hit the counterspelled copy that I don't need. It's just there on the stack doing nothing. Still counter their spell and draw 3 cards off it next turn, but like that's better than nothing. And, you know, if I didn't have other options in hand, I wouldn't do it. But it's been in a game when I've maybe have 10 cards in hand because I've drawn a bunch and I'm like, oh, I've got Counterspell that I'm going to use right now. I have Swan Song as a backup and I have this Arcane Denial. I better just draw 3 cards and then have 3 Counterspells in hand that I'm not going to probably need all of. So the hidden mode on that is being able to use it as a draw spell on your own thing. But even if it isn't a copy of a spell, there's probably situations where you're desperate for card draw and you're like, oh, I've got a 1 mana, you know, cantrip in my hand or something, and I don't want to choose the best of 2 cards. You know, I'm just going to counter my own Serum Visions and draw 3.
Yep.
So I have become a big fan of Arcane Denial. It's a great counter spell, and that little bit of versatility that you find yourself with the ability to use, particularly in that deck, is really, really nice.
Right.
Back to you, Max.
Okay, so my next one is Zealous Conscripts. It is a creature for 4 and a red. When it ETBs, gain control of target permanent until end of turn, untap it, it gains haste until end of turn.
So basically you can take someone's thing,
right?
Probably a creature, and swing back with it, but you can take permanents as
well. You take permanents.
It's a real useful card. It's in a ton of decks.
What is also interesting is I've seen people cast it to gain control of their own thing. So like a Krenko, they untap their Krenko just so they can tap it again to make oodles of goblins and then, you know, they have a board state or they all have haste for some reason.
Right.
And they swing and kill you. So stuff like that is really interesting because I've never really thought about doing it on my own stuff before, but seeing it happen was pretty cool.
I got killed with it. I can't remember if it was in a Purphoros deck or what it was to give their Purphoros. I think it was Purphoros. When I was at like 5 life or something and Purphoros came down and didn't have haste. And then they cast those conscripts to take control of their own Purphoros to give it haste to fit a swing in. And it was enough to do, whether it was lethal commander damage or commander damage, whatever it was. So as like a semi-haste enabler, I've seen it used that way as well.
I've actually seen this used on footage at a large modern tournament.
Oh, really?
Yep. It was a red-green Eldrazi versus Jeskai Control. The guy cast Thought Not Seer. It resolved. Looked at his hand. Ripped the counterspell out of his hand. Cast Eldrazi Obligator with its ability to give, targeting his Thought Not Seer, to give it haste. Obligator hit the field, and he swung for 7 and won the game.
Nice.
Very nice. Was it you?
No.
Oh. Because you play red-green Eldrazi.
Yeah. I've never actually had enough mana to do it that way, but I've thought about it before. Yeah,
that's like the dream.
Right?
Yeah. How about you, Chris? You got any more on your list?
I do not. Like I said, you made this really hard.
I did. I took all the good ones. I'll do one here briefly. Particularly in my Talran deck, the Cypher mechanic from Gate Crash and Dragon's Maze. And if you don't know, because it's only on like five cards and none of them are particularly good. Cypher, when you cast a card, you may exile that card encoded on a creature you control. And whenever that creature deals combat damage to a player, its controller may cast a copy of the encoded card without paying its mana cost. The problem with Cypher is none of the cards really do very much. You know, one of them kind of arrests a permanent, so it doesn't untap during the next turn, or that's detain, I guess. One of them untaps a permanent. One of them, I think, draws a card for four mana, though, to cast it. So it's not a great mechanic. However, the kind of the secret thing about it that's important to note is it's a cast. So if you're running any kind of a deck that cares about cast triggers, that procs cast triggers, whether you're kind of going for a storm effect or in my Talran deck, those ciphered cards make me a Drake. So I kind of don't care what the ciphered ability is. I've got Hidden Strings and I forget what the other one is called. There's two of them that both cost a blue and a colorless. One of which taps a creature and doesn't untap it, one of which untaps a thing. I don't even care which one it is for the most part. I mean, sometimes it's useful, but for the most part, it allows me to cast a spell to make a Drake.
Yep.
Imprint it onto a Drake that has flying, therefore evasion, and I can swing with it and probably hit somebody and make another Drake. So it winds up being a two-mana spell that makes me two Drakes, and then every turn thereafter, as long as that Drake is still alive, it makes me another Drake. So
broken.
Yeah, but like that's, you know.
Why did you play Talran at the 1v1?
You know what? I didn't think. I probably could have. I don't know if it would be fast enough, but yeah, it probably would have been better than what I was doing.
Just jam, you know.
Slam some Greaves on Talran and you're good
right,
to go.
Yeah, probably. So that's the hidden one on Cypher. I got one more I'm going to mention from that same deck, which is Mitiotic Manipulation, which is out of the first Mirrodin block. And what that does is it's two blue and a colorless, and you reveal the top seven cards of your library, and any permanent that shares a name with a permanent in play, you may put it into play for free. The intent of that, of course, in Standard at the time, because that was kind of pre-Commander, was, well, whatever gross thing you have out, if you hit another copy of it, you put it into play for free. Commander, that isn't a thing, because you're playing a singular format. However, in mono blue, you're probably going to have an island in play. And I've never not hit an island. If I'm going seven deep in that deck, I hit an island.
Right.
So,
God,
essentially,
I hope so.
I'm spending three mana in my Talran deck to make a Drake on top of it. But even if you don't, in green, people play Cultivate all the time to get one land into play and one into hand. This is just putting it into play untapped, too. It's not going into play tapped. So it basically lets you ramp a land. If you're in mono blue, I wouldn't try it any other color. In a color combination, you're probably going to whiff. Unless you're running 15 basics, and even then, you're probably going to occasionally miss one.
Yep.
But in mono blue, where you've got 27 basics, I think, in my Talran deck, I always hit one. It's never missed, and it makes me a thing. So it's a ramp spell. Anything else in that deck becomes irrelevant. That's kind of the hidden mode on that one. So those are the examples we came with off the top of our head. this is kind of my fault that we don't have more, because when we started doing this topic, I thought of all the ones we've mentioned, essentially, and I'm like, oh, this will be easy. We'll come up with a bunch more. And these are the ones we came up with. So it seemed deep when we started doing prep for it, and then there actually wasn't that many more that we could think of, but there probably is. And I guess it depends on how far down you want to dig, because like technically I've used Swords to Plowshares to save myself from dying by gaining life. That's probably less common than Path to Exile, but like I've used Swords for that purpose.
Well, we had like Sudden Spoiling and Polymorphous just on the list in the notes, but we kind of discussed off mic that they really aren't modular.
Because everyone kind of knows that they do 10 or 15 different things.
Right. And as you were just talking, I was kind of thinking, recently in Magic, there's been a lot of board wipes that say destroy creatures with X power or higher.
Right.
So like Elspeth, Sun's Champion. Her neg 3 is destroy all creatures with power 4 or greater. Well, you could use either one of those in response to save your entire board because they're all going to become 1/1s or 0/2s.
Right.
And now Elspeth doesn't hit them.
I mean,
they turn back to normal the next turn.
Honestly, the biggest problem discussing those two cards is there's so many uses for them that it's tough to kind of almost narrow them down.
Right.
Best use for Sun Spoiling is when they have Avacyn out and they cast an Armageddon. And you cast it, and you're like, what's up?
And they can't respond because it's got split second.
Love it.
We were actually discussing this the other day. And this is on the split second topic. And I know this isn't part of what we're talking about. But there is a way around split second.
I think Morph is the only way around
split second.
And Cycle.
Yep. And there's actually cards like Willbender or something that can change the target.
Right, yes.
It's like, oh, I'll morph my Willbender. My trigger goes on the stack because it's not an activated ability. Right. And I'll just move that over to your guys or something.
Yeah. I've never seen that happen, but yes, I've seen enough Willbenders in play and I've seen enough Sudden Spoilings. I'm surprised it hasn't ever popped up. But
yep, it's something to keep in mind for everyone who plays that if you're seeing a lot of split second cards in your meta that are really crushing you, look at the morphs.
Yeah. Morphs get around a lot of weird things for sure. All right, so if you guys have any of these kind of weird modular cards that do a thing other than intended that you see in games that's worth actually pointing out, send them our way in the Twitter birds. We'll talk about them in an upcoming show briefly. I'm always interested in hearing weird uses for commander playable cards.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how many of them someone says, and I'm like, why didn't I think of that?
We are totally going to have that happen.
And there's a couple we skipped, like Ghost Quarter. I've used Ghost Quarter to fix my own colors before,
yep,
to sack a land and then go get, but you're trading two lands for one. It's not great, but it's also sometimes better than not casting spells because you've not drawn that third color for six straight turns.
I've totally played a Temple of the False God with no other lands in hand, not online, and then ghost quartered it to go for a colored land. It's like, you're doing me nothing right now.
Right. Yeah. So our sign-out question, we've gotten a lot of dual land cycles in the last few years. And also the Lorwyn filter lands were pretty pricey. They were over $20, most of them for quite a while. And they're now down in like the $5 or $6 range since that reprint.
The reprint ones are that low.
The reprint ones are low. The original ones are still
well over 20.
Yeah. But so they're much more accessible for the average player as well. So between, and now shocks are going to go down because they're showing up in the Guilds of Ravnica as well. So again, the original shocks won't drop, but like you'll be able to buy probably $5 or $6 shocks, I would guess, here in 4 weeks.
For half of the guilds.
For half the guilds at least, and the other half in January. So between the price of some of the more pricey duels dropping and just us adding a bunch of new duels to the system, are there any duel lands that you guys have stopped running, any of the cycles? Because at this point, we're pretty deep on dual lands.
Guild Gates?
So were you running Guild Gates before?
No.
No, that's actually a good answer, because a lot of people were. Like, if you didn't have fetches, didn't have shocks, didn't have the Lorwyn filters, and up until a couple of years ago, actually, I had Guild Gates in decks not that many years back.
I still run a Guild Gate in one deck.
Because it's foil.
That's good. So, yeah. All right, well, that's a good reason.
No, but if you're on a budget, Guild Gates are great.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
There's like the Shadowlands, the show lands where you have to show a plains or a island in order for it to come in untapped, are a better alternative to the Guild Gates because you're probably going to have a basic in a two-card deck in your hand over a Guild Gate.
And those ones are really cheap. They're like a buck-ish a piece.
Right.
The duels that I used to run a lot of, and I run it one deck still, same deck I have my Guild Gate, are the Bounce Lands.
The Ravnica Bounce Lands,
yep.
Sure.
I don't think that they are any good anymore. The amount of duels that you have available to you, it's not even worth it.
Yeah, I mean, because we've had, like Max mentioned the Battlelands, the Shadowlands, excuse me. We had the Battlelands in Battle for Zendikar. We got the Cyclers from Amonkhet. They finished off the Fastland cycle in Kaladesh. We got the other half of the Manland cycle is that also in Kaladesh?
That was in Zendikar.
That was in Zendikar. That's right.
Or Oath of the Gatewatch.
Yeah. So those have all gotten to finish, plus the Theros Temples not that many years back. So like in the last probably 5 years, we've gotten, seven different dual land cycles, essentially, either brand new full cycles or half cycles or finished cycles. So that's a lot of new lands that have came into the mix.
And our most recent favorites would be the Battle Bond duels.
Yeah, right. Yes. I didn't even mention those, and those are the best of the bunch, probably.
Those are crap. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Because you play 1v1.
Yeah, they don't work well in 1v1.
They are bad Guild Gates in 1v1. And in regular Commander, they're amazing.
No, I'm just mad because the amount of battle bond I pulled, I have yet to pull one. It's
I actually have...
No, I pull True Name Nemesis and...
Doubling Seed. You pull all the good cards.
I pull all the good cards. I can't pull any of the lands.
I think you'll probably be okay with your Doubling Seed. I think it's the world's smallest violin playing for Chris, pulling $25 cards.
Well, and the worst part is no one has them for sale around us.
No.
So you have to literally buy them online with... Yeah. The code of Flipside Gaming?
CMDR.
Get entered in a chance to win some of those spicy shock lands from Ravnica, Guilds of Ravnica.
Yeah.
All right.
It's going to be so awesome when I play in Standard because I'm just going to bust out my OG my OG shocks. Are going to be like, what's that? I'd be like, you know what that is.
The standard legal card.
Dissension.
So I have added Lorwyn filters I wasn't running. I don't think I had any. I had one Lorwyn filter in a deck before the reprint, and I've got a couple in decks now just because they fell down so much, and I like those lands. When Shadows of Innistrad came out, I put those Shadows lands in like three or four decks, and then when Almonquet came out and we got the Cyclers, those bumped out the Shadows lands. I don't think I have any Shadows lands anymore.
Yeah, I don't play any of those.
Being fetchable and being able to cycle them late in the game if you don't need the land is so useful. So like the Shadows lands lasted about 6 weeks for me, and then they got bumped out by the Amonkhet lands. And even though they finished the cycle, I don't remember any of the man lands anymore either.
You run Hissing Quagmire because it's
on
touch.
It's on theme in that deck, but that's the only one.
Yeah, I run more of the man artifacts. Like in Mogus, I run the Kolaghan's command or the Kolaghan's monument. There we go. I knew it was Kolaghan's.
You have Rakdos Kieran in there too that you can turn into a dude? Yeah.
I have all of them.
Nice.
Pretty soon I will have Lockets too.
And how about the Fastlands? Were you guys running those?
No.
Fastlands? No. I do not like the Fastlands in multiplayer Commander for the simple fact of 90% of the time when I draw them, they're dead and they have to come into play tapped.
Right, yeah.
And it's just annoying. I'd rather have the ones that check. Say, if you control a mountain or a plains or something, it comes into play untapped.
I mean, if you're playing CEDH where like games are going to probably be closing on turn four, well, then they make a lot of sense there. They're pretty strong. Outside that, if your games are on average going 10 turns, they're just going to be guild gates way too often.
Yep.
I think the only place I run them is in enemy color decks where like there's like six less choices. But yeah, I think allied colors, there's just too many options nowadays for those for myself as well. But I'm curious what the general consensus is out there about people. Have you stopped running Painlands because, you know, you've got nothing? I like Painlands a lot, but I'm wondering if people maybe don't. I'm just wondering what changes have happened. Or have you just gotten super greedy and you're like, I'm not running any basics. I'm just going all duels.
That's almost my Mogus deck. Because there's a lot of like triple red, triple black stuff. And it's like, I need to be on curve at all times.
Well, I was playing with a guy this week at the shop, and I can't remember what the conversation was about basics. And he's like, yeah, I've got no basics in this deck. And it wasn't even like a five-color deck. I think it was a three-color deck.
Was that Lucas?
It was not.
Okay.
But he
fixed that.
Did he? Okay.
This guy, yeah, he had no basics in his deck. And I'm like, you can do that now. Like, you couldn't have done that 6 years ago, probably, without running a bunch of terrible guild gate or worse type duels from back in the day.
Yep.
But nowadays, in a three-color deck, you could conceivably run all effective duel lands.
Yep. There's enough gain life duels from all the other sets that you have enough.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of dual lands. There's no reason to proxy any of them.
Shots fired.
Dang.
All right, so.
You can find me on Twitter at WiseSquishy if you want to discuss this. I will talk to you personally on my personal Twitter.
And you can find us on Commander Central if you want to reach out and let us know what you think of the changing face of dual lands in EDH. That is going to be it for this week. I am Dana.
I'm Max.
And I'm Tony.
You're not Tony.
I'm Chris.